You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone listening to Bowerman Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and I'm very stupid. And tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest one of all, BFT. Hey, how's it going?
Woo!
Yeah, you always think you got everything, and then you don't have anything. You really get some more money to fix things that eventually stops working because everything depreciates, you know?
Yeah, and I don't have a beer, so I totally get it.
Yeah.
I need to go get one right now. Right meow.
That works. That works. I got to go push some stuff around later. I've been inside all day. I'm crazy. But anyways, did you know that next week, real life, actual football is going to happen?
It's for really real live football. It's going to be cool. Like, I don't even think I'm going to watch a game this weekend. I really don't want to watch a bunch of guys who are going to get cut. I don't have time at this juncture of my life, and I just really don't, yeah. Good luck, guys. Hope you guys make a team. Hope somebody else picks you up when you get cut. So long.
I don't want to watch Thursday's game, but I think I'm going to have to, and I'm going to be very upset the entire time because I should be writing or reading or watching The Sopranos. But...
Right.
But, yeah, I'll probably end up watching it. I also have a friend who's a Cowboys fan, so I may watch it with him and talk about fantasy football and whatever. But, yeah, so, this is for the preseason. Next Sunday, the Texans will be playing at 12 o'clock in New England Patriots up in New England. And I'm just so excited that it's an afternoon game. But before that happens, we need to talk about the last team of the AFC South, the Houston Texans. And last week, we did a preview of the rest of the AFC South, and if you forgot, you had Indy winning 5 games, Tennessee winning 10 games, and Jacksonville winning 10 games. I had Indy winning 6 games, Tennessee winning 9 games, and Jacksonville winning 11 games. So there's close. There's just some slight discrepancies here and there. And so as we go through and talk about the Texans and kind of project the season, you can keep that written down your palm as we progress through the show. So on offense, Deshaun Watson's back. He's played a little bit in the preseason without knee brace. The accuracy. Looks like they're there. Are you concerned with him at all health wise, or do you think he's 100% okay and will be okay this entire season?
I don't know if he's 100%. I mean, that's the thing with ACLs. So ACLs are tricky in a couple different ways. Number one, you tear an ACL because you have so destroyed the ACL, right? It's an injury that is in large part, especially in Deshaun Watson's case, and in most cases where it's not an acute injury to the ACL, it's an injury of wear and tear that eventually happens. So the good news is it's no longer worn and torn. And the bad news is, and the good news also being that he had surgery. And the bad news is it's not every ACL surgery is 100% effective, but at this day and age, the vast, vast, vast majority of them are. So I would like to think in a lot of ways he's actually healthier than he was at this time last year, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's been, like, I mean, just watching him play, like, he seems like he's fine. I don't see a whole lot of difference between him the way he is right now than the way he was last year. And, last year was a bummer. I don't really know how the knee works. I don't know if it's like you're saying it's a degradation thing. I know there's a lot of rumors that the reason why he tore his ACL is because he ran the ball a lot against Seattle. Which really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me because I guess he was going to tear it probably. And I couldn't see why running the ball a couple extra times against Seattle would change. But so far this preseason, the games I've been forced to watch, and I've watched him these force-fed games. He's been, playing pretty well. and he looks healthy.
Yeah, that's really, I had not heard that he hurt it because he ran too much in Seattle. That's not how ACL injuries actually work. That's just silly. It's beyond silly.
Yeah, that's the stuff that you get whenever you read the comments sometimes and are plugged into the internet more than, you know, you should be. Like I am right now. So I was mentioning numbers for you with Watson at quarterback. So last year the Texans averaged 21.64 points a game with Watson. Their DVOA was 36.9% compared to negative 23.1% without him. Their pass offense DVOA was 44.2% compared to negative 29.5%. They averaged 2.3 more yards a pass. They averaged 49.1 more rushing yards a game. They averaged a half yard more per carry as well. So, do you think Houston's going to be able to replicate what they did last season when Watson was healthy?
I don't think so. And the biggest reason that I say that is there's a sample size issue with that. Why did it give me that? That's not what I want to see. There's a sample size issue with it. And really it goes back to the BESS game when he dropped 57 points on him. So, you know, you look at the games that he actually started. Seattle, yes, they dropped 38. Cleveland, 33. The Chiefs 34, New England 33, Cincinnati 13. So that, you know, if you take out that 57 out of the sample size of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's going to be a pretty big deal. That's like 8 points right there. So I do think that there's going to be back to a normalcy of a certain level. Then again, you take out that game and, hey, you know, they're scoring, you know, roughly 28, 29 points a game. That's pretty dadgum good. I do think a couple of them were kind of crazy, you know, dropping 38 on Seattle, 34 in Kansas City is not a surprise. Dropping 33 on New England was kind of a surprise. Are they going to still be really a lot better without him or with him than without him? Yes. I don't think it's going to be 21.6 more points per game, though, but they're going to be a heck of a lot better. And I think we get down to it eventually. Okay, so I'll keep another part I want to talk about a little bit later when we get to the Lamar Miller section.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any chance I really don't understand that saying when people say there's no chance in hell, but I don't think on earth, on hell, in heaven, in purgatory, in a cold, meaningless, you know, afterlife that doesn't exist, that Watson and the Texans offense is going to score 31.6 points a game this year. And I think a lot, or 34.6 points per game this year. And I think the biggest thing happened last year is, you know, teams were really caught off guard by this offense. They weren't used to all the multiple play fakes and play action passes off of it. They weren't ready for a quarterback to throw the ball downfield with the accuracy. They were really, you know, surprised by what Houston did. And I think this year, they're probably going to score maybe like at most 27 points per game, which is about a whole touchdown less, which is still, you know, really great. But I don't think there's any chance they'll be able to keep up with that same rate of last year. And also, like, when you look at the offense, too, it's pretty much the same offense as last year with the teams on the offensive line. But everything else is the same as it was as well. I think it was last year was a short sample size where they caught the rest of the league, you know, really by surprise. And that what happened last year was just a tremendous game, and that's something that's me, you know, long lasting heading into the season.
Yeah, and one way that's a great, and I was going to get to it eventually. I was going to let you take the first shot at it. Is, look, the fact is he only started, you know, a handful of games. The league did not adjust, so we have guys that we can go back and look at, you know, notably somebody like RG3. Robert Griffin III, who tore the league up his rookie year. Everybody adjusted for him. He also got hurt, but the league adjusted for him and took away what he was doing that was really taking away, killing other teams. And teams did not have that opportunity to adjust. And so when you looked at Bill O'Brien's playbook heading into 2017, what you saw was the old poodle offense. It was poor, poorly run, poorly executed, and not putting players in the right scheme. All of a sudden, Deshaun Watson comes around after the Bengals game. You had a completely different game plan. You had jet sweeps. You had passes to Lamar Miller in the flat, just basic, you know, stuff like that, that was been just missing, was vacant from Bill O'Brien's game plan for the last 3.5 years. So once they implemented all those changes, it took the teams a little while to catch up with that. I think if the season would have progressed and Deshaun Watson would have stayed healthy, I do think we would have seen a considerable regression because teams would have adjusted. And we didn't see that in 2017. I think we see that in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, like, it's kind of funny how, like, novel the concept is as well, too. Like, even just, like, what speed is able to do to an offense where even the guy with Watson, like, you can run his own read, and then you can run an option off the zone read, and then you can run a play action off the zone read, and then you can run a play action through the screen off the zone read. And so there's so many different – the offense becomes just so multidimensional whenever you have a guy with speed and then the accuracy on field passing. And whenever you go from that to Tom Savage, who is, one, a slow brain, two, is inaccurate, three, can't throw the ball downfield. You can't move the ball like traditionally how a passing offense does, with lots of rubs, you know, lots of route combinations, the quarterback from the ball where he's supposed to, you know, in the defense, see the zone man, knowing where to go to from there. That's even those options that you don't get with having a quarterback who's slow, you don't even get with their backup quarterbacks because that's how bad they were as well. My other concern going back to Watson and this year, and had some regression involved there as well, was that his touchdown rate was insane. Like, his DVOA numbers are insane. The Texans scored 34.6 points per game. He had a touchdown rate of 9.3%. So of all the attempts, 9.3% of them went to touchdowns. Now, the only quarterback since 1990 with a minimum of 200 passing attempts to beat 9.3% was Peyton Manning. He's the only quarterback to eclipse 9% twice in his career as well. He did once, I think, in 2011 with the Colts, and then his first year back with the Broncos as well, or his second year with the Broncos, he did that as well, too. Another quarterback has been able to do it all. So, I'm in the camp that Watson's never going to touch greater than 9% for the rest of his career either. And so, is Watson going to transcend enough to keep this offense going? And do you think Bill O'Brien can keep innovating to keep this offense surprising defenses, too? And also, is there anything in particular you think Bill O'Brien can do to make this offense stay fresh as well?
I do. I could probably talk about 3 hours about this. I can't tell you how much I've thought about this particular question over the past couple of weeks, you know, getting ready for this podcast, because I think about it a lot. What we saw for the first 3 years and two games, and the second game, because the hands were kind of tied, I get it, and I'm going to give them that, is Bill O'Brien's offense was straight trash. I don't know how you argue around that. He did not get quarterbacks in who were good. His scheme is terrible. And it was an ineffective offense. This was a team that heavily relied upon defense to win. If you look at the variables heading into 2018, I think the biggest one is which Bill O'Brien scheme shows up and how. So what we did see is that he adjusted his scheme to allow Deshaun Watson to do the things that he does well. And that is not be a pure pocket quarterback. Get him out in space, let him do things, let him make the passes he can make, doing the jet sweeps, all sorts of misdirection. I mean, the Bill O'Brien offense was just straight up. There's no misdirection. There is no deking. There is none of that. It was, okay, here comes a power run. Okay, this is what everybody's going to run a curl and sit. It was just ineffective. It was unimaginative. And all of a sudden, Bill O'Brien had a change. And his game plan was, I very much enjoyed his game plan after the change. So, you go back to some of the things that Bill O'Brien was saying earlier in the year, this year, was that I need Deshaun Watson to fit my scheme better. And that to me seems like just really bad idea genes, right? Watson was successful because you got out of your scheme, not because of your scheme. Do you see, like, your scheme, the only person who ran it successfully was Tom Brady, and Tom Brady's going to run any scheme successfully. And so is it going to be Bill O'Brien's scheme for Deshaun Watson, or does O'Brien need to feed his ego and it has to be his scheme or the highway? What I saw in the preseason was I saw a little bit of both, which would not be bad. which would not be bad. So if we can get Deshaun Watson to become more of a pocket quarterback, which is a good thing, and he's already a good pocket quarterback, wonderful. If you keep a lot of the misdirection, and it looked like, and I'm going to let you speak to this, Matt, because this is a topic I want to talk about. It looked like we were running a little bit less power and a little bit more inside and outside zone. Again, early preseason stuff, don't read much into it, but at least there is that glimmer of hope. But the number one variable heading into the 2018 season for me and the Houston Texans is, which offensive scheme do we run, Matt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you would want. You would want a mixture of it to both because, you know, you have to protect Watson's health as well long-term. And you know, you want him running, but you don't want him necessarily running for, you know, rushing yards unless it's in situations where you can get the defense overloaded one side and get him, you know, one versus one versus guys in situations where he can slide. Because this team can't if anything happens to Watson. It doesn't have a competent backup quarterback. You know, it's, if anything happens to him, this season's pretty much over. I'm hoping we see more of what we saw last year with all the different run plays, all the different run fakes, all the different ways to open up guys throwing the ball downfield. I just think they have to add more wrinkles to it and do more interesting things. I hope it leads to more of that being interesting than the changes that Brian talked about earlier this offseason being him going back to that same, you know, shotgun pass, DeAndre Hopkins, I play on one sideline, and it slips on the other sideline, the wide gets open, dump the ball off into the flats and tied in for the, you know, 40% of offense they've been running this entire time. And that's, you know, I think part of the concern for the season one is last year was just, you know, crazy. They should drop off some, you know, no matter what. But the other concern as well, too, is how is O'Brien going to, you to keep this offense new, exciting, new, and fresh. And hopefully he tries to do this not by reverting back to his own way, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and it's got it. There has to be a happy medium there. And when we start talking about what can he do with the scheme-type questions, I go back to a little, hey, guys, let's just see what, like, little Shanny and Matt LaFleur are running. You know, they get their quarterbacks out in space. They get on the naked bootlegs. Hey, throw a little, you know, these are Kubiak tree-type offensive coordinators. You know, you're taking Matt Schaub, you're doing bootlegs with them, even some naked ones, they're not bad, and you have a much better athlete to run them. You can do a lot of things in a scheme, in a modern football scheme that we see across the NFL today. Again, Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan, if you kind of model your scheme around what they're doing and how they use their quarterbacks and how they use their running backs to get a lot of free, easy yards, then that would be, I think, the way to go. You also keep Watson protected. You don't want, like you say, don't want Watson running the ball at all. Like, if Deshaun Watson never has another 50-yard run in his career, I'd be the happiest person because that means we probably did something right. So, you know, protect Watson, but get him out in space at the same time. Let him use his legs. Let him get to the outside and create different passing lanes for the team. And you can do a lot of damage that way, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also like the offense, too, because it's – I guess it's like football nostalgia for me where you just like – you watch the quarterback throw a play action pass and he's completely open, nobody's around him, and then he just has a receiver open 45 yards downfield. And we kind of saw that at times with, you know, some of the throws to Will Fuller deep downfield, but they were created more off of, you know, inside play action fakes and faking zone reads and faking the jet sweep and then going downfield and that sort of thing, too. So, I don't know, like it's super exciting. This offensive thing can have a huge variance in it, where like the ceiling's enormous. I think the floor can be enormous as well too, depending on what O'Brien has cooked up and what and how they have to win games. But just like all the different options and plays that you can run, when you attack defenses, and you have a player like with Watson's caliber, is super fun. Now with Watson this year, are there any concerns that you have about his game? Although everything was as great as it was, you know, nobody's perfect. Everybody has flaws. And is there any part of his game that has you concerned for this season?
I got to say, I really kind of don't. Everything comes down to nitpicking. I mean, I kind of made, I was watching the last game with a friend, and it was really kind of funny because he threw a ball behind the receiver. And it's like, oh, that's the worst pass he's thrown all season. And I think it was to Ellington. It was a little bit behind him. It was like, yeah, he was like half a yard off on his accuracy, you know. I think his accuracy is fine. It needs work, but it's not something I'm going to worry about. And I really hammer this one home. what he does so well is he's just willing to make the throw. And I think that a lot of, you see a lot of quarterbacks in the league, they just stop making throws they have to make. And Deshaun Watson is absolutely fearless about just pushing the ball downfield. You cannot be successful if you don't push the ball downfield as a quarterback. In today's NFL, he doesn't. So I kind of go back to, okay, he's doing a lot of these big things right and a lot of these smaller things. Like, you know, he needs some accuracy work. He doesn't have a big arm. That's fine. But he makes up for those shortcomings by his mental processing. Goodness gracious. And his ability just to make throws, Matt.
Yeah, I think, like, that throw you're talking about, I think I know what you're talking about. That's the things I really like about him, though, is his accuracy. Not even just, like, his accuracy as far as completing passes, but ball placement. Like, he puts the ball only when his guys have it. And it's so incredible, like, watch him after watching the last, you know, 4 years of Texas football. Previously, we have all these quarterbacks who just throw as hard. They either throw as hard as they can at the guy. They can't put the ball anywhere close to him. They throw the ball out of bounds instead of giving him a chance to make plays. And Watson understands, you know, that one simple thing where you put the ball to a spot and let your guy run and catch it. You don't throw it at him. You throw it, you know, to a point. And Watson's so good at that. I don't – you know, his arm strength is never going to be great, but I think it's good enough, especially if he puts his entire body to it. But that being said, you don't want him throwing a ton of, like, curls and outs to the far side. And, the one concern I have about his game this year is just interceptions. I feel like last year he got – lucky quite a few times, you know, throwing passes to, you know, kind of on his first read and not seeing the linebacker in front of him and throwing interceptions that should have been picked off. Last year, he threw 8 interceptions in 6 games. Football Outsiders this year hasn't projected to throw 16, which I think is a number that he could, you know, very well reach, even with throwing, you know, 25, 30 touchdowns to Ritter. So I think that's my biggest concern, though, is just the interceptions. He only 6 games last year, only started 5, and so I don't think he's been out there enough to fully, you know, like, read defense as well and not see through guys and be able to quickly go through his reads. I think that part of his game is going to take a long time, and so I could see him throwing a high number of interceptions, kind of like, you know, 13-12 or so.
Yeah, and you can't disagree with that. He's still a second-year guy with only 6 games under his belt. I guess, you know, when you ask the question, are you worried about anything? Well, he's going to have learning. He's going to need to learn. The interception rate does worry me to a certain extent, but also to a certain extent, that was also such an outlier, I expected to come down. So, yeah, it's just mostly he just needs to get older and get more experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he played 464 year, and you know their backup quarterback was as many snaps as he did in the same amount of time as well. So you know there's a lot to like, you know, of course, but I think my thing is with Watson is that I think long term the Texans are in a great spot with him, starting him on his contract. I think there's no doubt that he's a franchise quarterback, but my concern is for, you know, this year specifically, I don't think it's going to be as great as it was last season during that 5-game run. I think it's easy to just say, well, he was great last year. He's going to be even better this year because of the second year. The progression isn't linear. A lot of things that he did last year were, I wouldn't say, but they're unsustainable. And so I can't see that, you know, even a standstill this year, the amount of production, let alone bump up at all, because the offensive line's better and Watson's been around for another year.
Right, yeah, I get it.
So he still has to throw the ball to guys, and the wide receivers are pretty much the same as they were last year. DeAndre Hopkins is here. Will Fuller's out wide as long as he's healthy. Bruce Ellington is supposed to be in the slot. Maybe Kiki Kute can take over that spot, but he didn't really play that sort of more, I think, heading Ellington. There's also the occasional Braxton snap, too. So last year, Hopkins saw 41% of the team's targets last year. Do you think any younger receivers are going to go from, you know, the occasional flash to actually being consistently productive this season?
I don't know. I think Braxton Miller's had a pretty decent preseason. I don't think there's a whole lot of reason to think that he is suddenly broken out, because he also, if you consider, he also did a lot of his damage against second and third string guys. We have to have a wide receiver. And, you know, the guy who I want it to be, Matt, and we've kind of talked about him a little bit, but he's got to stop the damn dropsies, is Bruce Ellington. I think that he is really the guy who can step up and play that role. He is slippery. He gets open. He's just the ultimate kind of blue-collar number two slot receiver guy that you just have to love. I mean, you know, it's fun watching him play, but he's got to stop the dadgum drops, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, Ellington's fine. I don't think he was as good as he was last year as people thought he was. You go back and look at the numbers, and, you know, he was great with Watson, but I think everybody remembers that touchdown against New England. He kind of forgets that he didn't do a whole lot other than, you know, that one play. It's kind of like Ryan Griffin last year. Like, he had that one catch against New England, didn't do anything else really the rest of the time. Fuller for sure has the potential. He has the skill level, he has the talent, but it's just about him being healthy for an entire year. And last year, Watson led the NFL in the average of his target at 11.2 yards. And, like, that's what, you know, you have with Fuller. And Fuller's also a perfect complement to Hopkins, where whenever you have safeties rolled over towards Hopkins' side, whenever he's double-teamed, you have to have a wide receiver who can slip both safeties, they'll open up the routes for Hopkins, or, you know, you have to have receivers, guys in one-versus-one man coverage. Fuller can do both those things, but it's just not in situations where, one, he can get hurt, and then, two, you know, that's really the biggest thing. It's just one thing. Just, like, don't throw him, like, slants over the middle where there's linebacker standing over there. I don't have Tom Savage at quarterback who can absolutely get him running.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And, you know, clearly Will Fuller has to step up. And by stepping up, I mean just play. This is his third year. We spent a first-round pick on him. One of the biggest fears that he was not my favorite pick. I love the speed factor. He's a freak that way. But he is just so small and diminutive and chicken legs. So, you know, the fact that he's already hurt again doesn't help. So the guy, he has to stay on the field. You can't let him return punts. You can't let him return kicks. He has got to just play wide receiver and just take away as much risk as possible, because without him, that we really only have one decent weapon offensively, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. You know, maybe Lamar Miller steps up and plays a big role. But the other guy is Will Fuller. He has to be there.
Yeah, I agree, too. And going back to his rookie year, his average of the target was 15.7 yards in 2016, which is fourth. And then last year, 17.4 yards, which was second. And, you know, like, he has to play more than 500 snaps in a season. He has to play, you know, close to 1,000, you know, 900, that sort of thing. He needs to play in more than just 10 games. And if he does that, and even if he doesn't have the production he had last year, he's not going to catch a touchdown on a quarter of his catches like he did last year. He had 28 catches. He had 7 touchdowns. He's not going to ever match that production probably ever again. But he just has to be a threat on the field. He has to be running deep. He has to draw attention. And that will just make, you know, DeAndre Hopkins' game so much easier. Now, Hopkins, in his career, he's had to deal with the Andre Johnson, you know, disease where all your quarterbacks are bad and your numbers are overpriced because of it. He's had to catch passes from, you know, classics like Brian Mallett, Ole Blair. This year, if Watson's healthy the entire year, Fuller's healthy, do you think he get some production similar to Julio Jones, Antonio Brown? They kind of put him in that spot from maybe the third or fourth best receiver in the game to the first best receiver in the game. They possibly would be, but I guess isn't, because the numbers don't back it up.
I think it's absolutely possible. A full healthy year of Hopkins would do it. And let's just look at just one kind of basic, you know, play, just a shot play, right? Where you have you have Fuller running the stretch and letting Hopkins, and you just talked about a little bit, let Fuller run the stretch, let Hopkins sit down and take the underneath. You can still get a lot of yak after that, let the tight end also run underneath. You know, just basically just a simple West Coast stretch kind of offensive play. You run that till, you know, you Hoosiers that play until everybody can run it when they're tired and can't move anymore. And I think that play could do a lot of damage for DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, you're talking, you could throw that play and get 15 yards play after play after play with it, and do that 4 or 5 times a game. Well, that's already a pretty big deal, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we just go back to. there's so much that this offense can do with what it has weapons-wise. We're not going to get Jack from the tight end position as far as, like, kind of physical talent, right? We're going to get Ryan Griffin. But if you can use Will Fuller's speed and you can use DeAndre Hopkins to do everything that he does well, it could still be an offense that puts up a metric ton of points because they have so much receiving talent and speed talent and a guy who can make the throws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially, too, if Kuti can actually be a deep throw as well, too, where you have two of those guys in the slot. You have two guys either in the slot or out wide who can, you know, stretch the middle, can stretch the field open, and that will just open up Hopkins a lot more, too. And Hopkins can sustain a passing offense on himself. By himself, he's done it, you know, for years of his career as well, too. So that's something to keep in mind. I would still put him as, like, the fourth best receiver. I guess I'd put him three behind one and two. I think Odell Beckham's a better, you know, talent receiver, but he was injured last year. It's hard to put him in front of there. But, I mean, he's a top five player, and, you know, it's hard to kind of put him in that, like, number one spot in the time, so we get that elevated amount of production. And with Watson healthy, you know, that's a possible thing that happened. And I know you mentioned you're not getting the tight end position. What do you think is going to happen there? Do you think Ryan Griffin's going to start? If he does, you know, how bad is this position going to be? And even the Texans are still going to run a lot of offensive sets, but they have finished last in DVOA in the spot using, you know, about 3 plays a year or so.
I'm not excited about the position. I mean, I guess it's safe to say everybody knows that, you know, who listens to this podcast knows that I really don't like Ryan Griffin. I think that signing him was a waste of time and energy. And, yeah, I just, why? Why? You can go out and sign 10 guys who are free agents who give you that same skill set. Akins gives you a little something-something from the physical standpoint. I think he would be more exciting if he wasn't already 26 years old. The other guy, Michael Pruitt, is interesting in his own kind of way. Jordan Thomas is really a blocking kind of guy at the end of the day. If you are looking for excitement, you're looking straight at Jordan Akins to hopefully give you something. And I got to say, I think, you know, we've looked at Steven Anderson to kind of play that role over the past few years, but the dude's like 6'2", 230. He is not big. He's a total tweener. I don't think he makes the cut. I think the Texans roll with Akins, Griffin, and one of Pruitt or Jordan Thomas.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know Anderson was only 6'2", 230 until you said that. He looks a lot bigger on the field. He's not a good blocker, and it makes a lot of sense now. He's kind of more of like an oversized, like, slot receiver. But the problem with Anderson is that he's been bad in the red zone the last two seasons, and that's what you're kind of paying him for. You have him on the roster for to be a big red zone threat. I mean, he hasn't been that all whatsoever. I think they should have signed, you know, a guy like Dwayne Jenkins, or they signed some sort of tight end that could be maybe a possible starter, even though the free agent class is bad this past year. Because, you know, Griffin is a chip blocker. He doesn't make anybody miss. He can run the seam, he can run the flat, but he doesn't really offer anything else to this offense. And, again, he's a terrible blocker as well, too. So, you know, if Akins can – he ran two nice routes in that Niners game. Any sort of production out of that tight end position, aside from Griffin, would be helpful to prevent efficiency of this offense. And even if Thompson can actually – or even if Thomas can block well, that would be huge to listen to. But I think if anybody can do things better than Ryan Griffin, it's going to be good, but – I think Tyron, you know, really bagging whatsoever. I know you mentioned Lamar Miller earlier. Are you buying into his weight loss tips this year? Do you think we're going to see the best version of Lamar Miller we've seen so far?
I hope so. You know, I really loved the when we signed him. I thought it was a fantastic signing. We just put him in the wrong scheme. If you look at what he did with Deshaun Watson last year, he ran the ball for more yards per carry, and he was effective out of the backfield. So if you maybe put that together on a 16-game season for Lamar Miller, and all of a sudden he's a pretty dadgum good running back to have back there. His under the Deshaun Watson scheme, almost no matter what it is, because it has to be changed for Watson, Lamar Miller is going to be a more effective running back. And if he lost the weight, I've never read where a running back has gained weight and it turned out to be a good thing. So with Lamar Miller losing weight, he's going to be more nimble, more nimbly-pimbly, since I've already made one Super Troopers reference on the show, that if he can be more that guy that he was in Miami, I think he could yes, play a huge role. So am I buying into it? Yes. And this one's just blind optimism because he was really good last year with Deshaun Watson, and I expect everybody has to say, oh, wait a minute. Hey, Lamar Miller, he's not a power running back. Let's do other things with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I that's the only possibility of him being good, I guess, is if it was a weight thing, if O'Brien had him bulk up to you get 300 carries a year, which sounds like something Bill O'Brien would do. I can buy that. And if he, you know, if he gets quicker and that sort of thing, they run more outside zone, they run more passes to get out in space, I think he can have a really good year. And last year, he was one of the most efficient, you know, running back receivers in football, even if his run game numbers are bad. He did a good job, you know, picking those curl routes and making one guy miss and picking up first downs. So I would hopefully, yeah, all that chicken and rice and broccoli, you know, also going to make him back to at least, like, even if it's like 80% what he was in Miami, that'd be a huge upgrade to this offense. Especially so because Deontay Foreman, his Achilles on that great touchdown against Arizona, and Alpha Blue is still going to be the second. We had a viewer question that was asking if there's any players after cuts that you used to make. And for me, I want to see them add another running back. There's always running backs available. I see running backs out there better than Alpha Blue because just about any running back is better than Alpha Blue. And with, you know, Pope was cool. Irvin still hasn't, you know, met what his video showed him to be as a player at San Jose State. And so I want Houston to just kind of go out and add another running back, too. What do you think about Texans' depth chart running back aside from Lamar Miller? Do you think they should go back and add somebody? And how much are you dreading being back here again?
It's just a poor fit. I mean, he's a plotting guy. Oh, yeah, he's had a great preseason. Again, he's doing against twos and threes, and it's not lose our ish because Alfred Blue didn't look like crap, okay? He's not a good running back, and he's a poor fit in this offense. He doesn't give you anything above and beyond special teams-wise aside from the fact that he plays them. So that has to be highest on the priority list. And I tell you what, I would just be, you know, running back would be great, but, man, I would be scouring for any sort of quarterback talent because if Brandon Whedon is your number two quarterback, makes me want to hurl.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
and it's not going to happen. I'll just be honest. It's not going to happen, but goodness gracious, at least, like, go try.
Yeah, I agree for sure. I mean, Whedon's going to be here. Anything happens to Watson, it's going to be terrible. Like, it's another, like, complete oversight. I mean, I think one of the frustrating things about being a Texans fan is they make great decisions to have top-end talent, but they make so many, like, simple brain decisions that are, you know, unbelievably stupid that, you know, you can be a loser with your computer at your mother's house, understand that it's bad and wrong and dumb, and they still consistently make it. And bringing Whedon back to the backup quarterback again this year is one of those mistakes that, you know, if anything happens to Watson, you know, they're screwed completely again last year.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's the unforgivable curse in Harry Potter, right? It's the unforgivable stupid roster move. And we get them all the time. And we really get them all the time. And, it's, you know, that's Rick Smith. A lot of that goes on him. But, again, this is a guy who was the general manager for 10 years. We won 3 playoff games. And I swear to Durga, every time I wrote something that was anti-Rick Smith on the blog, everybody would blast me as being hateful. And it's like 3 playoff wins, 10 years is not success. And it was all because he couldn't draft after the first round. First round hits, wonderful, great. But a lot of the free agents, a lot of the reason the Texans were successful in the late aughts is because Gary Kubiak put together those teams in 2006. Rick Smith didn't add a whole hell of a lot. And let's face it, J.J. Watt was Wade Phillips' pick. So let's see what Brian Gain does. Maybe we can do it. But this year we're so hamstrung by Rick Smith's stupidity that we just couldn't do a lot. We were limited on draft picks. We had some money we could go set on fire free agency-wise. We didn't do it. RG3 sitting out there. Colin Kaepernick is out there. We ain't going to sign either of those guys. So, it's, you know, we're hamstringing ourselves in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was like Matt Moore, that would have been a better quarterback two option. They could have signed Teddy Bridgewater, you know, even though I wouldn't want him to be in Houston because he needs to be starring somewhere. You know, they had better quarterback options, and they kept Whedon because he knows the offense. Everybody in the locker likes him, you know, that same whole sort of spiel. But I guess the most important part of this offense, or I guess the second most important part of this offense that we should have spoke about earlier, but I'm bad, is the offensive line. So the offensive line last year was probably the second biggest caveat on this team, aside from the drop from John Watson and Tom Savage. Last season, they had 12 different players to take a snap. Do you want to try to name all 12 of those players that took a snap offensive line last year?
Heck no. I could maybe come close, but no way.
It's kind of like guessing every quarterback who threw Andre Johnson touchdown in his career as well, too. It's
right.
Always a fun ball game to play. But they finished last in just a sack rate. They gave 54 sacks last season. They finished 30. Pressure rate 36.9%. This offseason, they had Martinez Rankin in the draft in the third round. They signed Zach Colton, Leo Calamente, and Chantrell Henderson. So are you satisfied with the moves they made? And do you think Houston can even have a mediocre offensive line season?
This is another question I've thought a lot about. Am I satisfied with the moves they made? No. I think Andrew Norwell should have been the number one priority in free agency. I know that he signed for bucketfuls of money in Jacksonville, but I still think that should have been addressed. That should have been for number one. But that said, are we going to wind up giving up 54 sacks, 31st in pressure rate? I don't think so. I think that I have been happily pleased with the way the line has looked. Again, we play the Chiefs, who are terrible. Their defense is going to be really terrible this year. We play the Rams, who didn't start anybody who's going to start. So, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt, but they've looked pretty darn good, Matt. And I don't know about you, but I'm not as likely to throw up when I watch that offensive line play right now.
Yeah, I mean, this preseason they've been, you know, adequate. I think one of the things has also helped is they've been throwing the ball pretty quickly. I've been trying to watch the run game better, especially on the interior, but it's such a mismatch of just stuff going around. I can't really tell what's going on, but I've been watching, you know, Davenport pretty closely. He looks a lot stronger. His punch is neutralizing attacks. There's not punching, and then the defense has been able to run afterwards. They're kind of being stonewalled. Their bull rushes aren't working like they worked last year. And so I think that was one of the big keys of this offensive line this year, is that Davenport got stronger, and it looks like he did. He looks like he can be a confident left tackle this year, which is an enormous advantage to go from Chris Clark to, you know, confident. Bro Giacomini had the most blown blocks in football last year. Right now, Henderson's going to start right tackle. I think Henderson's the biggest part of this offensive line. And I think he's been really masked this preseason, too, by the quick passing game. And edge rusher's been able to bend around him and get around. The ball out so quickly hasn't really affected them. And that, I liked the Calamente move. Really liked the Fulton move. I think the interior blocking to me a lot better. And so I'm excited. Part two, but I do think the Texans' offensive line can be mediocre. I think if you just expect it to be a disaster again, it's such a hard, you know, you have to like go back and, you know, watch stuff to know the offensive line's gonna be good or not. But I think it's gonna be at least, I think it's gonna be mediocre at most, and I think it can, you know, reach that level this season.
Yeah, I agree. When I went into the offseason, I was in total dread, but I was way on board with Calamente side. I mean, I was so excited when we signed him because I loved watching him with the Saints last year. He's absolutely one of my favorite guys to watch, which I know is like kind of insane. I get it. Fulton was going to be an upgrade over anybody. Davenport, I got to say, Big Matt, you really nailed Davenport. He is a left tackle. He looks like a left tackle. He moves like a left tackle. He's got the reach of a left tackle. I don't know if his ceiling is going to be much better than average, but that's not bad. So, you know, that's a good win if he turns out to be average at left tackle. So, Giacomini got cut yesterday. Dude started for us last year at right tackle. I think every game, or like 14 out of 16 games or something crazy like that. He's not even, he started, golly. It's not like he wasn't the worst offensive lineman in the league in 2015 and 2016. He was. And he started 16 games for us last year at right tackle. Thank you, Rick Smith. So he's gone. That alone is going to be a huge victory. So this is a team I think that could be average offensive line. I'm a little bit actually excited about him, Matt.
Yeah, and I also, the other kind of like the big wild card too is Rankin, because Rankin was the only I watched all the tackles last year, and he was the only one I watched. He could both run block and pass block. Matt McGlinkey couldn't. Colton Miller couldn't. And all these guys who were in the first and second round, you know, couldn't do that part of the game. And Rankin could both, you know, pass and run block. And he looked really good in that Rams game at left tackle. He gave up a pressure because he blocked down instead of, you know, block the defensive end rushing up the field. And but other than that, like, he looks super strong. He was, you know, making one-on-one blocks. I know he played some guard as well in that preseason game. I 100% think he's a tackle. I think if they put him at guard, that'd be the wrong move. And I think Sean Henderson's the biggest weakness on this offensive line. I think he's going to be bad, too, whenever he's out there. So hopefully Rankin can, you know, get to full speed, can get a better grasp on the playbook by, like, you know, week two, week three, and take over at that spot. And with, like, young tackles and, you know, like, a strong interior offensive line, like, you know, I think mediocre is a possible thing to have happen here. And I'm, you know, super excited watching, you know, both Davenport and Rankin this year, too. So the quicker Rankin gets on field, the better for the Texans.
Yeah, it's funny. If Rankin improves like he should, then I think you're looking that Zach Martin's going to be your weak link on that offensive line at the end of the year. And that would be a great turn of event. I'm not really high on Martin, I have to admit. But you're looking at a great turn of events if that turns out to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Martin's fine. I think he's been good. He's been better in pass blocking than run blocking. And, like, he's been solid. Like, he, you know, there's some guys who can just kind of make blocks and exist. And then there's other guys who can do a lot more than that. You know, drive guys downfield, make crazy switches to help pick up blitzes, and those sorts of things. And I think, I don't know if Martin's ever going to be like that absurd sort of, like, you know, guy makes great blocks and all. But I think at a minimum he can be, you know, consistent, you know, enough and have, you know, some mistakes here and there. But I think Martin can be good enough, though.
Yeah, I guess I look at him as an average to slightly below average kind of guy in the big scheme.
Yeah, and I understand that PFF score where he was rated as the worst center in football last year. I wonder how much of that has to do with, you know, the guards around him playing next to, you know, Suofio and Jeff Allen, of course.
Yeah, just think about that. Think about that. I mean, let's look at the best starting offensive line we could have put out last year, which would have been Giacomini, Jeff Allen, I guess until he got yanked. Jeff Allen, Zach Martin, Suofilo, and Dwayne Brown. And look at what we've got this year. That's a pretty big upgrade, I think.
Yeah, and I think also having Mangs, too, as a guy to back up both the center and guard spots is huge, too. So in case anything does happen, have that depth. And I think even if Henderson becomes a backup and Rankin takes over, that's an okay guy to have as your third tackle. It's like having a guy who can run block, not pass block. And it's kind of like the opposite of, like, Chris Clark, where he stepped in, where he could pass block just well enough when he was playing his best, but was terrible at run block. He's kind of the opposite of that with Henderson in.
Yeah, and I've been saying Martin. Obviously, I mean Nick Martin. My bad.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk about the defense. I know the defense is a little bit, I guess, like, more set because we know these guys. We know the front seven's great. And so the front seven's looking like it's going to look the way it started off last year, where you're going to have J.J. Watt at one in position, Christian Kitts at the other, D.J. Reader at nose guard, Zach Cunningham, and Bridger McKinney inside linebacker. And then Clowney's going to move from defensive into outside linebacker, and then Whitney Merciless on the other side. So what are you expecting from J.J. Watt this year? Are you expecting, you know, 10 games, 12 games? Are you expecting 10 sacks, 15 sacks? Are you expecting, you know, 15 tackles for a while? What are your thoughts about him entering the season?
I don't – has it ever been harder to project a guy because of his health over the last couple of years? But at the same time, considering his work ethic, it's just – it's impossible. And then, you know, watching the game over the weekend against the Rams, you know, he looked really slow at times. And then there was that play on the goal line where he was in the defense or in the offensive backfield, like, in a split second. This is a hard guy to guess. I'm going to go very conservative and think he's going to give us 12 games. He's going to give us 5 sacks and he's going to play way above average run defense. And if he can give us that, that's great. You have to take that and be happy with it at this point of his career.
Yeah, especially from a 3-4 defensive end. And like, we've been spoiled rotten when it comes to him. And like, even if he puts up that, like, that's still a really good player. If not greatest defensive player of all time in production, but it still is really good. For me, my outlook with Watt is simply whatever he produces is an added bonus. I don't think you can kind of come in this season and expect anything from whatsoever because he's only played 8 games the last 2 seasons. I think if you're banking on him, you know, that's not the best way to go about it. It should be an added benefit. Like, you know, hopefully it's good if he's out there, and if he doesn't, you still get by and survive. But I'm expecting – I really can't expect anything from him, though. I just think he's just kind of a bonus, you know?
Yeah, I think so. But how do you question his drive and his desire? His body's kind of starting to fall apart. It's what happens, right? You're a football player. Football players don't last, you know, much past 30 years old for a lot of reasons. There's all the talk about, oh, well, left tackles, you know, do great in their late 30s. No, they don't. You can look back at the history of left tackles. Almost every one of them is done by 35. So it's hard to question him in a lot of ways, but you got to look at it this way. In the last 2 years, he's given us 8 games, 1.5 sacks. That's it.
Yeah, and I know that he didn't get any sacks all last year, but he was got close a couple of times, and he was super good in the run game. And in that Rams game, he had one really great run tackle. That was exactly what you want whenever you watch him play. I have no question of drawing desire. But I think part of his problem in his career was that he played, you know, 1,200 snaps every year, and he was also getting double teamed and triple teamed and quadruple teamed. And, you know, that sort of production, playing that often, something that was like, you know, now looking back on, it makes sense that he kind of fell apart these last 2 years. So hopefully all that rest, he plays a lot. And I think if he plays, he's going to be great. But the question is if he plays, and then, you know, how much does he play if he even does?
Right. Yep. It's a hard one. And you got to root for the mayor of Houston. You have to.
Yeah, for sure. So while you're sticking with them, which would you rather have? The Texans go 11-5, win the division, they make the postseason, and anything happens, or they go 7-9, and you have 16 games of Watt, and it's an all-time great Watt season.
Wow, the Sophie's choice, much? That's a great question. I don't see those two things being correlated. That's the problem. Is I don't see J.J. Watt having a great season and us being 7-9. So it's hard for me to imagine that scenario, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would pick the 10-win season just because you can always go back and relive, you know, the incredible Watt games with NFL Game Pass. But I mean, I just like watching the run tile against Los Angeles is awesome because he hasn't done it in so long, and I forgot how much I miss watching him play until he actually made that play. So that was cool. Super excited to see what he can do. Hopefully we get, you know, 16 games of him and, you know, 12 sacks and whatever. My next question for you regarding the front seven is, do you think he has the most combined hit turries and sacks this year? Winnie Merciless, J.J. Watt, or Jadeon Clowney?
I'm going to go with Clowney. I think it's going to be the more I've thought about Clowney in this season, the more I think he's just going to have to be that guy. Whitney Merciless does get to the quarterback. He's a fine pass rusher, but he's no Clowney. I also think that Clowney moving out to – I don't know. I'd almost rather see Clowney at defensive end than outside linebacker. I really would, because that way he's just getting to the cornerback. He's not going to have any coverage duties. There's not even going to be the – we're not even going to pretend he's got coverage duties. We're just going to say, hey, get in the backfield and kill people. And I think that would be a better role for him. But I think it's going to be Clowney. I think it's going to be Clowney by a pretty good distance over Merciless and Watt as well.
Yeah, I think so too. And I want him to play defensive end this year as well. I think it was kind of like one of the problems made at the beginning of his career was that he kept switching between two. And it always seemed like he looked more natural as a defensive end than outside linebacker. But I think that's one of the benefits of Romeo Crennel's system and what he's done before in the past is that they're going to play 6+ defensive backs. They're going to move guys around a lot of different spots. I think Clowney can do everything, is going to and should. He can do everything from playing, you know, an outside linebacker to a hand-down defensive end to rushing over the center. But I think preferably rather have Christian Covington on the bench, finally playing defensive end, and then you keep Edgy Ofor or even Cole playing the other outside linebacker position. And adding a little bit from there, because Clowney just looks a lot more natural at that spot than outside linebacker.
Yeah, I just think about what you said, too. Who would you rather – we just watched the preseason. We just watched Edgy Ofor, and I can't heap not enough praise on him. He's a fascist, right? He just does not want anybody else to tackle anybody on the field. He's like doing himself. He's going to – that's it. It's all mine. And you got to love that about him. Motor, reach. He was reading plays in the preseason. Do you want Helm or do you want Christian Covington on the field? That's your choice. And to me, it's not a tough one.
Yeah, I know. It's fun, too. Like, his inside move is great. His spin move is great. The only problem that he can run to, as a rookie, is kind of overreaching when, his pass rush moves and kind of, getting beat by misdirection, that sort of thing. But, he's been awesome this preseason. And I'd rather – like, Covington has always been bad when he's named the starter and then good as a backup. And but Joel Heath has had the better – preseason that Covington has so far this year.
I'm just rethinking about how the NFL is built right now. Just once again, would you rather have Heath or Clowney? Would you rather have, because Clowney plays the run so well, it's not like you're going to get a whole lot there. You're not going to get a whole lot more with Heath. You're going to get less there with Heath. So why wouldn't you go with Clowney at defensive end and then get you a four off the edge?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of different combinations, too, aside from, once you get past Cunningham, Kenny, Watt, Clowney, Reader, and Merciless, I think you're just see a bunch of guys kind of coming in and out. Now, the problem here with this defense is the problem with this defense last year. It's that the front seven is very volatile with injuries. Clowney has an extensive injury history. Merciless, tore his ankle last year. Watt has an extensive injury history. McKinney and Cunningham haven't been injured at all, but who knows what could happen. Reader's been able to stay on the field as well, too. But they don't have the secondary to make up for any injuries to their front seven. That's what happened to them last year. The year before, they did because they only lost Claude and AJ Boye, who was a top 10 cornerback that year and is now probably top 5-1. But so this season, they added safety, Justin Reed, and Kareem Jackson, safety. They had Tyrann Mathieu. They signed Aaron Colvin. And so do you think this secondary can make up for the front seven if something is going to happen? And also, do you think with Romeo Crennel, defensive coordinator, instead of Mike Vrabel, that he could help make up for the front seven if injuries would happen this year?
I think it really depends on you watched the games in the preseason, Matt. What did you see the cornerbacks doing? Were they playing close press man coverage or were they playing off the ball?
They're off the ball predominantly.
Predominantly. And you have to because you've got no talent there anymore. Jonathan Joseph's done. Sorry, he's done. Kevin Johnson is pretty much done. Aaron Colvin's moving into a new position. Kareem Jack, he's playing outside instead of slot cornerback. You've got Kareem Jackson, who doesn't have foot speed or good footwork, even though he's going to be a lot better as a safety than as a cornerback. And Tyrann Mathieu has looked really, really poor the last couple of years. I don't know how you can ask Joseph and Colvin to play press man coverage, or at least play at the line, close to receivers, and not expect to get burned on the back end. And so I think Crennel is going to have to be just as conservative in that respect as Vrabel was last year. You just can't take the chance of that happening because then you get the lid blown off and you give up the big touchdown. So what I kind of see is I see what the Chiefs did to us in 2015 a couple of times, which was the quick-hitting passes, let the quick guys, the Tyreek Hill, the Albert Wilson-type guys, get speed and just get them in space and let them do a lot of damage. I see that happening to the Texans all season. And then you negate the pass rush as an added bonus.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ways you can do it. But also, I think too, I think the safeties can be good enough to stop deep passes and help out. I think they can't play off man coverage. Then they have to play press. One, because you have to give your pass rush the 3 seconds needed to get there. And also, with Jonathan Joseph, he doesn't have the speed to break on the ball anymore, play off man. He's great diagnosing a route, understanding where the ball is going to be thrown, going for it. He doesn't have the speed to come down the ball anymore, so he has to play press. He's terrible. I mean, Burt, you know, last year his problem wasn't bad. His problem was that he doesn't have the linemen to beat downfield, but whenever you have, you should have their safety play. You know, and also having two competent safeties is going to be the ability to be able to shadow better. Kevin Johnson, I'm not expecting anything from at all this year. I think he's going to be really bad again. I don't know if Aaron Colvin's good. He came from the comfiest situation in slot corner he came last year. And also, like, this preseason, he hasn't really jumped out. He gave up a bad touchdown pass as well, too. So I'm not really expecting a whole lot from him either. But I think that's the biggest concern about secondary is, or this entire team. My biggest concern about this team is if anything happens to the front seven, they lose that pass rush productivity. They don't have the cornerbacks to be even a middle pack defense. Like this is probably one of the five worst cornerback groups in football this year. It's going to be awful, it's gonna be ugly. It's going to be bad, but I think the safety play in the front seven pass rush make up for it at times. But if anything happens to any of those groups, I think it's going to be just horrendous. You're going to get into a lot of like one possession shootouts, and there things can break anyway, kind of like how they did last year. They went 3-3 with Watson anyway.
Right. So, I mean, if you look at it, just what happened last year, we were 23rd in DVOA, and we were really close to being 26th in DVOA. So, our 25th, I'm sorry, in DVOA. So, it was not a good defense, and we haven't made any changes outside of adding Aaron Colvin. You get a year older with McKinney and Cunningham. That's probably a good thing. We lose Mike Vrabel, which I think is a great thing. We add, Romeo Crennel back at your defensive coordinator. So we're depending on health. And really, we've got three guys who get to the cornerback right now. Merciless, Clowney, and Watt. I don't know if Watt can do it anymore. So who's going to get to the quarterback in order to create pressure?
I mean, it's a weird thing because also, like, it's a bummer too because they didn't have a first round pick and also, or a second round pick, and they didn't, there really wasn't those guys to go out there and get. My favorite cornerback available in the free agent market was Kyle Fuller, Chicago, but he signed his offer sheet that was offered to him. You know, Tremaine Johnson is going to make $18 million this year. There just really wasn't a lot of options at your defensive back. I guess they could have traded Aqib Talib. Or Trey Forks leave, but still he's 31 years old. Maybe they could trade for Marcus Peters, but they didn't have the draft capital to really count. I guess they maybe could have given up next year's Seattle pick, and then maybe, I don't know, something else. But there really wasn't a lot of possibilities for it. But I think that's for me this year. I do think the biggest question on this team is health, and that's going to be the deciding factor in how the season's going to go. Something that we've talked about, is Kareem Jackson moving to safety. They finally did this year. He's not playing slot corner anymore. He's not playing outside corner. He's playing either free or strong safety. I think both roles are going to be pretty, they're not going to be really defined. I think it's going to be really fluid in that spot. So, what have you thought as you watched Kareem Jackson in preseason? Are you still super excited and super happy he moved to safety?
I'm super happy that he moved to safety. I'm super excited that he moved to safety. I'm not super expecting him to actually be good there. He turned 30. He's already 30 this year, so he's already on the wrong side of that number. He's always struggled with the speed, his long speed, his quick speed, or his quick area speed. He's struggled with his footwork. I think he's going to be a lot better at this stage of his career as a safety than he would as a cornerback, but my expectations are still just kind of limited. If this was a move we would have made 2 years ago, I think we would have had at least 2 years of Kareem Jackson being a very good safety. At this point of his career, at this stage of his career, I'm not sure we're even going to get that. So, number one, it's the right move. It's 2 years too late. Let's hope it works out. But this is a much better position to put him in to succeed, I think. Matt?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think he's better than you think he's going to be because he's one of the best tackling defensive backs in football. Anything that gets him close to the box and run the ball, I think is going to be a huge benefit. And, like, as long as he's not having to cover, like, slot receivers one versus one, I think he'd be good enough in coverage. He's done an okay job against tight ends in the past. And then also if he's just, like, playing only a third of the field, I think he can be good enough at, being a, like, you know, cover two safety. If they can be able to keep them, like, you know, a third part of the field instead of taking on half of it, just because the speed kind of isn't there like it has before. Like, when it comes to tackling, like, playmaking and recognition and knowing where the ball is going, you know, he has all those things covered. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think if he was moved to this position two or three years ago, he could have been, like, a really good safety instead of possibly being a good one.
Yeah, and that's what I expect, though, is I expect that to be a matchup that's really exploited by opposing offenses, right? If you're looking at our defensive backs, you're going, okay, Kevin Johnson's not good. Jonathan Joseph's slow. Kareem Jackson, I'm going to make him cover a fast guy. I'm going to make him cover a slot guy. I'm going to make him cover my tight end who can outrun him. That one just has, for me at this point, has the best matchup possibilities for our entire defensive backs. Is I'm going to put Kareem Jackson in a place that he has to make plays against a guy who's going to be either bigger or faster, and because Jackson's going to struggle in that kind of role.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, and even next, we'll have, I mean, interesting to see what Matthew does this year. I know last year was a down year. He was injured the year before that. And also, he's dealt with some injuries too. It's interesting to see what he can do. I think Houston won't be obliterated by short passes and screens like they've had before in the past. I think both also offer really interesting blitz opportunities for Crennel as well. I know defensive backs usually take a year or two to get ready. I agree long-term in the future. I don't know what he's going to be able to do this year, though. And so I think Jackson and Matthew are primarily the safeties for this team, too. And it's going to be better than it was last year. Sorry, Hal is a very good player. But, like, having Hal and Andre Drummond, this is a much better situation this year than it was last year. But I think the quarterbacks are, of course, going to be terrible again.
Yeah, and I've mentioned on the show, signing Tyrann Mathieu was absolutely the right move. But there is, a reason nobody else signed him to a longer-term contract, and, B, a reason the Cardinals dropped him. So it's great. He's absolutely the right move. That's a great risk-reward profile to take on signing a guy. But I got to admit, Matt, that my expectation for Mathieu being good is – not high. I watched four or five Cardinals games last year, and I swear, every game I watched, I said, Tyrann Mathieu is a shell of himself. He does not look good.
Interesting. Yeah, it also helps, too, to have Buda Baker as well. You're ready to take over, too. And the Cardinals are going to be super interesting this year, too. That's a different show. I guess a different life you could be getting some of those. Now, for special teams, are they going to finish top bottom five in special teams?
Do I have to answer this question? I am really frustrated at Kaimi Fairbairn. I really had higher expectations. I thought he would do better. I've been a little bit disappointed. Thank Durga, Nick Rose will not be on the roster.
God. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
One of the worst field goals I've ever seen at Temple.
I swear, I was a better field goal kicker when I was, like, in high school. That was just a terrible performance. So we need Fairbairn to do what I think he can do. He should be better. And I tell you what, and I just got to say it, and I see the question hanging out there for me, and I'm going to – what would I give up to have Trevor Daniel replace Shane Leckler? And I guess I would say it's the beer I'm holding. And you guys know how much the beer means to me, so this is a pretty – strong backing of Trevor Daniel replacing Shane Leckler.
Yeah, I mean, the Leckler thing is drumming in for like 3 years now or so. Because the Texans' special teams keep changing. The coordinators change. The personnel changes. The scheme changes. They keep doing all these different things. And the punting unit's still bad. And who's the one thing still there? It's Shane Leckler. And all he does is kick the ball as far as he can. He doesn't drop it inside the 10. He doesn't use hang time at all to set up, you know, his gunners at all whatsoever. He just kicks it as far as he can every time. And the punting team is terrible because of it. And he's the major reason why. And he's still back there. He's out there every year. And the punting team is terrible every year. And so for Dan, and like Daniel had some great punts in that Rams game. He's not 43 years old. He looks like he actually cares too. So I would give up like, I would give up one of my vacation days at work to have Shane Leckler. And I only get 10 of them, too. I only get 10 of these vacation days a year. And I would give up one of those for Daniel to kick instead of Shane Lex, which is like a trip to Big Ben, which means a whole lot to me.
This is another thing. I take so much crap. I took so much crap when I actually wrote on the blog about Shane Lechler has to go. It's like, but he's great. I think he's just mostly like because he has the big beard and he walks around with the Coors Banquet beer everywhere.
Yeah,
look, he doesn't kick to the right side of the field. He outkicks the coverage constantly. He can't do the little things that kicker. I mean, just look at Van Hecken for the Rams. I mean, look at what he does versus what Lechler does. And I don't even mean the quarterbacking prowess either. You have to do different things. Dang mosquitoes. You have to do different things in today's NFL. And Lechler is still stuck in whatever year he came up, 1967 or whatever.
Yeah, he's still punting for Al Davis, he goes. The same thing's happened to me too. Every time I bring up Shane Lechler needs to go, this and that. And now the narrative has turned from Shane Lechler, he isn't bad, but this new punter is just really good. You know, that's our narrative turn. But really the narrative is that Shane Lechler is bad and Trevor Daniels is a competent punter and there's an enormous difference between the two. And Lechler's been bad for 3 years. Also, here's a fun stat. So the Texans DVOA in special teams since 2013, 29th, 28th, 32nd, 31st. And this past year they finished 26th. So it's been bad every year. It's probably this year, and I don't see – it's one of the things that I don't expect to happen until it actually happens, kind of like Houston beating the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly. They have to prove it first at this point. It's been so bad for so long. Prove it.
So I guess kind of like big picture now. I kind of covered the entire roster and the entire team. Houston has a 31st ranked projected schedule this season, which means they have – they're playing the 31st toughest, the second easiest – and so, like AFC South, you know, their lives should be easier this year. Their first four games are at New England, at Tennessee, against the Giants, and at Indianapolis. So I have two questions on the schedule. One, which game are you most excited for? And two, which AFC South matches up against Houston the best?
So, as far as which one I am most excited for, that one's the easiest. The first one, New England. I mean, that is O'Brien's kryptonite team, right? There's nothing Bill O'Brien can do. Bill O'Brien's entire NFL career as a success has been punching down. He can beat teams worse than they are. He cannot beat teams better than the Texans are. He just cannot. So, once again, the Texans are fielding a pretty talented squad this year. Can he beat the Patriots? And, man, if you watch the Patriots in the preseason with the first team, they are looking tight. Tom Brady is just he's like a meteor. You just can't stop it. So it's that first game. If he wins that first game, I will have a lot more faith. If he shows me if he shows me a different offensive scheme than he showed me the last seven games of the season, if he shows me that he can handle Deshaun Watson and his talent correctly, I will be more excited. Romeo Crennel, dude, you and I, we're tight. I mean, you're going to work with what you're going to work with. You and I are good. But it's that first game. That's it. So we see what he does. If that's really what sets the tone for the entire season, if that's what he put in the work for all the offseason, if we come out and we see that old poodle offense from with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, I'm going to be pretty pissed off. So that is what it means to me. That New England game, that's number one. Which AFC South team matches up best against Houston? I think that's the Glitter Kitties. I think that it's, you know, they have the defense. They have the crummy offense. I think it's kind of a good match that way. And I'm definitely looking forward to those games against them, Matt.
Yeah, I'm not excited for Week 1 at all. I'm not excited for the Texans playing New England ever. Last year was surprisingly a lot of fun. I just did not... I'm just so tired of them just getting pantsed by them so many different times in so many different ways. You know, also just like the way they lost the match is so unbelievably stupid. So I'm just happy that it's not in prime time. That's the only thing that I care about. And also, I'm going to be in Canada, too, so I may not even be able to watch it live. We'll have to see how that whole thing works out. But whenever it comes to my most exciting game, I think if the front seven's healthy, I think this is the year we're going to get a Week 17 AFC South title game, because the past 2 years, the stupid Tennessee Titans ruined it. And I think this is the year where they won't, where they don't have a chance to ruin it, because Week 17 is the Texans against the Jaguars, and I think that could be the AFC South title game. Again, the front seven stays healthy enough, and I'm super excited for that one. Now, when it comes to which AFC South team I think matches up best against Houston, I don't think Jacksonville matches up that well, just because they're a run-heavy offense, and the Texans are going to be probably like a top-five run defense this year. I think it's just that game's going to be like really like violent and, you know, kind of plotting and which offense doesn't make a mistake and that sort of thing. So I don't think they match up that well with Houston. I kind of think if Andrew Luck's healthy, that Indy does, because Andrew Luck can put the ball downfield really well. You know, T.Y. Hilton has destroyed Houston so many times. And so I think they could win it, you know, like a 38, you know, 31 sort of shootout. And I think, and I have no idea what to expect from Tennessee this year. So I think, in a weird way, I think Indy could win like 6 games this year, 7 games. I could see, you know, at least 1, maybe 2 of those games being in Houston as well.
Yeah, and I totally misread the question, so that's on me.
It's all good. It happens sometimes. So we have, we had two viewer questions, One of them is about the Texans, you know, who they, who we want to see whenever they picked up, we are about to, and that was from Kid David. And I guess kind of adding on to his question too for you, 50, is there anybody that you want to see be cut from this roster for sure to make up for any potential cuts? But the preseason's almost to a close.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned a couple of them. I would love to see Ryan Griffin cut off this roster. I don't like Ryan Griffin. Shane Leckler, I'd like to see him gone. Obviously, Nick Rose. He's not only should he be cut, but he should be taken off the team. Those are kind of the big ones for me. D. Virgin was terrible in the preseason. He's been terrible every time he's seen the field. I'd love to see him gone. He's not roster squad worthy either. Kendall Lamb, I can't believe he's back with the team. I mean, it's just like, I mean, what's the prerequisite for Kendall Lamb actually being on the roster at this point in time? So there are, I guess there are a couple of guys that I don't want to see on the team anymore, but you know, those are the big ones.
Yeah, I think like it's, I can't believe it's not Butter, but it's, I can't believe he's still on this team with Kendall Lamb. Yeah, I agree with yours. I want to see Griffin gone. I want to see Leckler gone. I want to see Lamb gone. I kind of sort of want to see Brent Scarlett gone as well, too, so that way we can get more edgy
open. Oh, yeah.
And I think Cole could probably even play a little bit outside linebacker as well, too. He's super fast. He's a really quick athlete, too. And so, like, he doesn't even have to really rush the passer, but he can kind of drop back in coverage and, you know, run around tight ends and make tackles for loss, especially somebody who's going to get blocked 1v1 as well. And, like, Cole had every opportunity in the world. He's like Ufamba, Kamalu, where they both have had every opportunity – to be like a third pass rusher. They haven't done anything at all whatsoever. Those guys out there. Bram, we didn't be good to get out there too, but that's probably not going to happen. But yeah, like, I mean, I guess a lot of the cuts are going to happen on Friday, and I think we'll have like a tracker and all that, but I'm not expecting a whole lot to see the guys want to have get out of there. I think it's a lot of the guys that you mentioned, like D-Virgin, Vincent Smith, stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's, I love that you mentioned Brennan Scarlett. I'm sad that I forgot him. I think he is quite possibly the most overrated player on the Houston Texans since Zach Dials. I just, what do people see about him that gets you excited? He can't win one-on-one battles. He can't play pass coverage. He doesn't do any, there's nothing that he actually does well. What gets you so excited about Brennan Scarlett? I don't get it. Anyway.
Yeah, all he's done is like have those cleanup sacks where the quarterbacks have the ball for 7 seconds and he runs free and picks it up. He's not the guy in Halo 2 just crosses the corner to the shield to go down and shoots him once and then you know, runs away. For those of you who still think it's 2006, you know. But and the last question I have here is from Darth Grundle, and he asked me, how sad are you that your boy Bortles doesn't have Marquise Lee to throw to this season? Thus, the Glitter Kitties reverting back to their usual 4-12 selves. I'm bummed, not because of Bortles, but because I think Marquise Lee was going to be great this year. Just as like a slot receiver running a lot of drag routes and just catching quick passes and run forever in a spread offense. Especially, too, where like the Jaguars don't have high-end receiver talent, but they have a lot of, like, pretty good, fast receivers. And so they would go in, like, four wide receiver sets, and they're all running little short crossing routes. And, like, I was super excited watching Marquise Lee do that. I think the Jaguars are going to be fine. You know, Keelan Cole can play the slot receiver. I think they're going to have to wait for some cuts to happen and then try to add, you know, a number two kind of, like, outside perimeter receiver. But the Jaguars season doesn't matter if Marquise Lee's healthy or not. It depends on, you know, their offensive line blocking the run game well, Cole's not throwing interceptions, and then the pass defense staying healthy and not regressing to, like, the 10th pass defense but staying a top 5-1. So I'm sad for Marquise Lee. I'm not really sad or worried about the Glitter Kitties going 4-12 just yet.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Keenan Cole and D.D. Westbrook, I really like those guys. I got to admit it. I like them. I can't wait to see them.
I like Mickens, too.
And Mickens, yeah.
They're all pretty good.
They're just going to be running around all over the field. It's going to be like Techno Bowl with those guys.
All right, so here's the moment we've all been waiting for. Finally, how many games do you think the Texans win this year?
I think the Texans win 10 games. I think I'm going with this is a squad and a roster with a lot of questions. It's with a game plan with a lot of questions. I think they have as good of a chance to be 6-10 as they do 12-4. I think this is a team with a lot of spread. It's going to depend on scheme. It's going to depend on the coaching. It's going to depend on health, as it always does. If anything happens to Deshaun Watson, don't even want to think about it. So I'm going to go 10-6, that they're going to win games they should win, and they're not going to win any games they shouldn't win. That's the Bill O'Brien way.
Yeah. Man, I've been saying about how bad, like, how boring the 2016 season was the other day. Both the 15 and the 16 season, the Hoyer and the Namer seasons. And I was saying about that Lions game we watched together where they won, like, 17-13. And I still can't believe how boring that football game was. But anyways, yeah. My question for you is, who do you think wins the division then? Because you're picking, based off last week, you're picking both Tennessee and Jacksonville to win 10 games. So who do you think is going to win the division? We have a 3-way tie here.
I think the tiebreaker is going to go to Wow, that's a good question. I hadn't thought that all the way through. I think the tiebreaker is going to go to Jacksonville, and I have absolutely nothing to base that upon.
Sometimes the heart knows more than the brain.
Yeah, this is that case.
So, for me, I think somewhere between 7 games and 11 games. I think if Parrish is healthy, if they get Watt, Merciless, and Clowney for, you know, 16 games, or if they get 2 of the 3 for 16 games, I think the pass rush should be good enough to be a great defense, you know, a top 5 run defense, maybe a top 10 pass defense, but for sure a top 10 pass rush. And if that happens, then they can mask, you know, the issues at cornerback. I am the same play. We will help mask the issues at cornerback as well, too. And then from there, the offense can be worse than it was last year, but still be, you know, good, really good. I think, you know, that's enough talent there, enough production to be able to win 11 games. The problem I have, though, is that if anything happens to Watt, if anything happens to Clown, if anything happens to Merciless, if anything happens to 2 out of 3 of those guys, they're going to see it over. They don't have the secondary to be able to cover long enough. They're going to get scored. Even if Watson's healthy, even if the offensive line's better, even if Will Fuller stays healthy, they're going to have to play a lot of, you know, 38, 35 games. They did that last year with an unsustainable offense and went 3-3. And so I think this year, it won't be any different, and what makes you think they're going to win more one-possession games than last year? And then they're going to lose a lot of close high-scoring games, something like that happens. So I think they would probably go, like, you know, 7-9. So I think it's one of those things. I think the most important thing for this season is going to be the pass rush health. And so going off that, I'm going to go in between the two. I'm going to pick them to win 9 games. I think Jackson wins the division, and I think Tennessee and Houston fight for that second wild card spot.
I think that all sounds perfectly logical.
All right. Well, that's enough for tonight. I have some technical issues. I'm dominating a new pair of headphones to start off the show. But I'm live next week at 7 p.m. Central. We'll go over some, I guess, kind of more macro overall season predictions. And we'll preview the Texans-Patriots game. And then maybe the week after that, BFT will do a show by himself while I'm walking around up in Canada. But we'll talk to you live next week at 7 p.m. Central. Thank you for being on tonight, BFT. And my name is Matt West, and thank you for listening to Auburn Radio.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.